Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. The last story we are about to hear comes from Christopher Martin. He was introduced by Ben Larson. And thank you for listening.
I'm just going to go ahead and bring to the stage our last storyteller and a human tour de force, Mr. Christopher Martin.
Hi. Oh my goodness, what an awesome thing to be a part of, and thank you so much to Trapdoor and to Ben. So I decided to be a part of this because I wanted to talk about all the times I came out, and I keep coming out over and over again, because I think that's part of the human experience. Sexuality is part of our human experience. The very little clothes I'm wearing is on purpose, because my body is powerful, and it makes me feel really good about myself when I show lots of skin, and I thought that was going to help me tonight. Hold on. I took my glasses off because I thought I might just want to see blurs, but I'm okay. I'm not scared because this is a super wholesome environment. I am a second generation queer, and I'm so f***ing proud of it. Like, from the day I was conceived, I was an act of rebellion. My lesbian mom cuffed my gay dad, who was her best friend, to try to alleviate all of the concerns that my hyper-Orthodox family had about her inability to, you know, be a normal person and raise a normal child, right? So, like, me and my two gay parents, they conceived me, and I came out, like, really gay, like, real fast, right? I was just, like, extra gay, you know? And it's been cool, you know, because now that we're adults, I get to, like, kind of temper my mom's stories, because, like, she thought it was funny that I jump roped, and I thought it was funny that somebody thought that was funny. But my very first pride, I was 7 years old. I lived in Phoenix, Arizona. And I remember riding on my mom's shoulders into Pride. And I saw my first KKK rally. And I met my first Westboro Baptist Church activists the same day. And my mother gave me strict instructions. Like, I'm fresh out of kindergarten-ish. And I'm getting schooled on, like, how to deal with grand wizards. She says, we don't look at them. We don't acknowledge them. They're not part of our conversation. And we're coming into a new age now, for a fact. And we are controlling the narrative. So our whole country, because we won the cultural war. We did. I think it's super cute. They keep trying to strip our rights. And I'm like, but we're all the way here. She said, we don't look at them. We don't talk to them. Neither does the news. Right? Like, nobody does. And that's the whole point, right? We take away their power. Your freedom of speech is protecting you from being imprisoned for the issue you have to say, but I have an obligation to offer you a platitude. You know, you won't stand on my stage and speak. I will silence you with my disinterest, because that's really, like, what coming out stories are about. It's about autonomy. And about the fact that, like, you have this God-given, fierce, undeniable, and unstoppable right to be very much yourself. And if it does not negatively impact anybody around you, then nobody gets to not only do anything about it, they don't get to have an opinion. And I don't care what you think. And that's super cool. And she taught me that, right? And I'm very glad. I saw my first drag show, and it was funny, and it was like old school drag shows, you know, so it was so much more than lip syncing. It was puns wrapped inside of puns, and it was like fierce, like, gender bending energy. And I was really fortunate that I grew up in all these major cities, so I got to, like, enact that fierce energy, like, all the way. I got all the best shows, you know, all the best heroes. And somebody whispers to my mom, they said, he should not be here. And she said, why? And I said, yeah, why? Because I was always really loud, and I was very uninterested in the dumb-ish that you were about to say, because, like, I could read you like a book, right? And I just saw it. I saw it in your face, like, you were ready to impede on my autonomy, and I was not prepared to permit that. I got raised to be sex positive because people f*** up. They have lots of sex and they touch each other's bodies, and that's okay. I was also raised to be really fun with my body because, like masturbating and, like, holding yourself and, like, showing your skin. That's all super natural, right? Like, not, you know, not one word, two words. You know, it's not ghostly. It is incredibly and sensationally natural. And it was great because I knew what the difference was, and I was indifferent, and it wasn't a part of my narrative. So when I was 8 years old, I was in the third grade, and I came home with tears streaming down my face. And my parents asked, "Why are you so upset?" And I said, "Well, because there's this guy at school. His name's Tyler, and he's got really like piercing blue eyes and blonde hair, and he's like, you know, I don't know, he's pretty, right?" And I was like, "I think I'm gay, and people hate gay people, and I don't want to feel like that, right?" And it was that's the difference. That was my privilege, and that's something that I had that very few people often have, and I don't expect that from anybody, but I recognized it in my own experience. I was consoled appropriately as a child, and they said, "Okay, let's wait. And this is the first time I realized that, like, we have this inherited trauma. And I was not interested in being a part of the makeup plan, right? You know, it's going to be hard for you, and they're going to be mean to you. And it was true. It was terrible. I hated school. But I realized all of a sudden, like, okay, like, your job isn't to tell me how tough it's going to be. Your job is to tell me how good you're going to be at helping me through it, right? Right? And I was fortunate because I mostly got that. I did. And I did put it into a special place. I recognized my place in the universe and society and how it was going to impact my overall experience. Middle school went by. Middle school is awful. It's so much worse than anything because everyone is so very sure that they know exactly the kind of adult that they're going to be, but they have had zero practice. So they're just emulating like tons of terrible role models into this like mecha Shiva of like terribleness. And middle school was awful. But my first day of high school, this chick goes, "Hey, you gay?" And I was like, "No." You know, I said he said in his gayest voice. but I was. And it was maybe 14 days before I came out to my cohorts. I sat down at a lunch with one of like the meanest gay guys in the school, right? Because you had to be overtly hostile to like make it as a homosexual in high school, I think. You need to be like 100% sassy and intense. And I hung out with these great folks. And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I'm gay," you know. And it was cool. Nobody cared. It was always a non-issue because I am so much more dynamic, interesting, and complete than my sexuality. And I knew very quickly that my directive in this universe was to help people realize that your very presence by being here and being yourself is the least impactful thing you can do in your community. Your action, right? Like, so our roles, right? Our femininity, our masculinity. It was described to me very beautifully. They said, "Your feminine energy, you turn inward. That's your introspection. That's your power. That's your thought, your wisdom, your like unique process, right? And your masculine energy is your outward energy. It is your direct action. It is how you impact those around you." And I always felt really masculine. And I thought it was funny that anybody would tell me otherwise. Like, I split firewood. I can rebuild a car engine. I can fix your house. And I loved my masculine energy, and whenever I described myself as hyper-masculine, people would giggle, and that was stupid, but mostly because they weren't listening to me, not because it was stupid. It's because I was speaking with people who did not interact with me on my terms, which is fine, because it's 2019 now, and we listen to each other. that's our, like, generational giveaway, right, to the next wave. Is like, "Oh, you don't like that? Okay." Like, in what many ways can I impact my community and my environment so that you're more comfortable? Because that's the stuff we give, right? So coming out of high school, I dropped out. I was terrible. I was a terrible student. I turned in zero homework assignments. I had 3 credits in ceramics my third freshman year. I had missed almost 80 days of school, and I had write-ups in a folio. It was crazy. And somebody punched me in the face for being a faggot again. And I said, "Well, that's just not nice." And I put my backpack on over my shoulders, and I walked into the street. And then I walked into the park, And then I smoked my weed, which is way more socially acceptable now than it was then. So I was like being a hella rebel. And I went home and I said, this is, I'm done. I know that I have a lot to provide in my community and I don't know how to start. I know I'm not stupid. I know I'm smart. I process and apply information in my life really pragmatically, objectively. And I don't know how to do that, but I'm not going to do it here. So my mom was like, high five. And that was great. But it gave me license. I took off into the sunset. I traveled the whole country. I've been hitchhiking alone for years, going on 2 decades now. Like, since I was a small child, I just thought a really great form of travel would be to stick your thumb out on the side of the street and get somewhere. And I did that for years, and I did find something. I found out that there was nothing wrong with me. There was nothing wrong with my body. There was nothing wrong with my mind. There was nothing wrong with my perception of reality and the way that I carried myself. It was perfectly fine, and if it's not something you wanted to be directly involved with, all you had to do was walk 20 feet away, right? And that's what I started also doing. But I did follow my heart to New York. I had fallen very in love with a woman. Okay, you know, yeah. But I loved her. I did. I loved her body. I loved her mind. She fed me. She made me feel strong and influential. And I recognized the same traits in her, and we built one another up, and she taught me to ask less questions because we are from a society that is really needs you to put a name on it. It's like, okay, I get it. I get you're not doing exactly what I'm doing, but I need you to tell me what it is so I can Google that. Because what the real crime was is that no part of your humanity from the day you were conceived allowed you to accept the possibility that you didn't need anything from them except for them to be present. And I loved watching that because I wanted to be the rebel who walked away and said, figure it out your own damn self, right? And I had been surrounding myself with those people. So I loved my wife, and I said, I don't want to hate you, and I don't want to hate myself in 20 years for all the things we gave up for young love. So how about you pursue your major, and I go to New York? And I did. And when I got there, I wanted to do something dynamic. I wanted to use my brain. So I studied law for years at a really prestigious university, and I studied linguistics. I was raised multilingual. I'm super Jewish, and I love being super Jewish because we're like unicorns in the Midwest, right? Like, there's like 4 of us. And it was great. And about 2/3 of the way through college, I was not feeling fulfilled because I was bored. And when I get bored, it's really about to hit the fan. So I hitchhiked across the country for my very first time down to New Orleans for no reason. And I got there, and I'm like, okay, so, like, I'm just shy of a law degree. I speak, like, 5 languages fluently. What am I going to do for a living? And I became a prostitute. I had a lot of sex for money. I was also a stripper. And the coolest thing about this experience is it was going to shape who I was going to be for the rest of my entire life, and it was going to help me define myself to myself, which is an answer I never was able to solve. And all of a sudden, as a sex worker, I realized my skin's great, every inch of me. I got sober all the way. Like, I could no longer consume alcohol. It's not safe, you know? Like, there were specific risks affiliated with my choice of jobs. I went down there, actually, to work for a nonprofit, and I wound up f***ing off people for money. And I want to say it like that. It's really important. I f***ed off people for money. Because the only thing that's weird is that made you uncomfortable. Not everybody, but if it did, that's what's weird, not what I just said. Because it's my body. And I thought that I was going to try to feed myself with other people's input. But what I was actually doing was like feeding myself with my own input. I was making a lot of choices. And when I didn't like it anymore, I stopped. And as a professional in mental health now, I understand how important it is that somebody says, you have all the cards in your hand. It's your choice. So now I'm a young adult who's back in New York finishing school, and I have been a prostitute. And that was that that kind of stuff all up for me right there, because we could dig into my trauma, but we're not going to because it's pointless. Not right now, just in this particular instance, you know. But what I experienced in that time gave me a short list of things to decide to focus on. And what I didn't want to focus on is how bad it hurts when somebody else fucks you over, right? Because if I leave a window open for fresh air, I am not responsible for the criminal who crawls through, right? But we have inadvertently created a culture where we ask, but did you allow that to happen? I'm like, no. And guess what? Like 50 million other people didn't either. And you're dead wrong. So I started pouring myself into service work. I think that humans are awesome. They're everywhere. They permeate every part of my life. I'm way happier just like getting stoned and playing video games alone. But if one of you show up at my door, I will feed you lunch. And it guided me because I almost got trapped in a cycle of billable hours. I almost tried to get a graduate degree. I came back to Indiana from New York, and I stayed with my mother for a little while. And I said, I'm going to buy an investment portfolio, buy a property and rent it out for equity, or I'm going to go to graduate school. They're all about $100,000, right? And instead, I fell very deeply in love with a man. And I stopped doing all those things, and I loved him as hard as I could with every ounce of my being, because I never felt anything like that, nothing comparable, right? And it didn't work out, and that's okay, and we're very good friends, and he liked my post tonight when I said I was coming here. He's the best. But I was young, right? I was young, and I was confused, and I was unsure. And I'm so glad that I skipped whatever I thought that my next step was supposed to look like, because I wound up pissed off and fucked off, and it ruined my life. And I like moved to Indy. I was like, I can't even be in the same city as Erica for them. It all sucks. All my friends hate me. We've all been there. And I did, and it was great. I fell in love with this guy, right? And we became the face of gay marriage in Indiana. I'm one of 10 people who were photographed for the historical archives. In the state of Indiana, they had our banners like in the Museum of Modern Art, and they were like, this is what gay marriage looks like. And 9 months later, I was like, that's what gay divorce looks like. It's okay. Because it's all part of the process, right? Like, nothing I was going through was unique. It was just isolated and maybe like just like 10% cooler than the average, you know, like Vegas wedding. But as I progress through being a human, I started investing myself a lot in youth programming because I think that anybody who's 10 years younger than you right now has the next five lessons you haven't learned, right? The coolest thing about watching people grow up is they grow with you and they grow for you. Your environment is a direct result of the seeds you have sown. So if young people are making a positive impact in your life right now, you may have done something about that. And if you haven't, or if you're not sure, then you should try twice as hard right now today, right? We get to choose who we want to be each morning. And I loved working with kids. They taught me like how to see the world unfiltered and without constraint. As great as that was, life got weirder. And it doesn't stop getting weird for us when we're out trying to save the world, right? And again, I'm not going to dig into the trauma, but there was a period of violence in my life that affected everything that I was ever going to experience, take in, or give out for the rest of my whole life. I was always going to feel this violence. It's part of my soul now. And it forced me to redirect my energy into something. We transmute our pain, right? Into something that not only we can comprehend, but we know is going to embrace the person most closest and pull them into that, right? So I wanted to transmute energy. And now I work with houseless people. I love them. They're great. They're fabulous. You know why? Because wherever your hat lays, so is your home. I've been on the board for a national nonprofit for a couple of years. I have about 7,000 clients in 50 states. I'm proud of our numbers. I'm proud of what I do. I brag. I think it's very important. Because I applied initially to be a volunteer, and I said, but I have like some pretty serious qualifications, and I'd like you to just consider the fact that you're missing something really important. And one of the things that they were missing was a lot of queer administrative representation. And also, I like talking about sex, not because I'm a hornball, but because it happens and it's part of everyone's lives. And the only reason that you're ever going to not feel ashamed about it is because the people around you talked about it in a non-offensive manner, because you shouldn't be ashamed, right? We should destigmatize things. That it's 2019 now. We're breaking down the infrastructure, and that's what I'm very proud of. And I got to be a part of what infrastructure changes look like. And I take this job, and I took another job. I've lived all over. I could ramble and tell side stories. But in the last handful of years, I moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. So I was living in San Francisco, and then I was in Miami, and I was in a couple movies, and I was in a documentary, and I got to like share all the shit that mattered. And I wanted to talk about for the rest of my whole life. I wanted to talk about the times you got fucked off when you didn't want to. And I want to talk about all the ways that aren't okay to get fucked off and what that looks like. And I wanted to start using that language in my pattern of speech. I wanted to normalize it. And my mission in all of my weird queerness was to talk about normalizing fucked off and normalizing what you can and cannot do and what is not acceptable. In that process, just a few weeks ago, I came out to somebody I also am very in love with, and she's beautiful. One of my best friends, I professed my undying love to her. I said, you complete me. You give me everything I want, and I'm in love with you, and I have been for a very long time. I said, but I'm only telling you this because I need to feel better about myself, not because anything about our relationship is about to change. Because nothing had to be different, right? Because I wasn't entitled to anything that another person has. I'm entitled to talk about how I'm feeling right now, right? And I love her, and she's great. And I love her boyfriend. And we it was a cool coming out story. It was real fun. But what was real important is I realized I might be kind of an ace. And it's so weird, like I came out as gay and then maybe bisexual, and then I was really into the L word. I don't know if anybody's really into that, but like I'm from dyke culture, okay? And I whether or not you identify as a dyke is not relevant to me. The people who do identify as dykes, like they raised me. Like I'm a part of your culture. Thank you for showing me your strength. Like I'm the man who I am today because of dykes, right? And they're dynamic, and I'm a cool, productive faggot because I was raised by powerful and unflinching dykes. And I love that energy, right? And I want to give that to everybody I've ever talked to. And I just now realize what an ace I am. And that's okay, because asexuality has been really weird for me because I had to analyze a lot of my former relationships. And I said, is that love? Like, do I love them enough? If I didn't want them that hard, did I love them enough? And I started to realize over time that what I'm actually doing is I'm asking myself questions about their narrative that is not mine, and trying to figure out what my narrative looks like by analyzing other people's experiences. And that's really unhealthy. Coming out as an ace was dynamic for me because I do like to fuck. I still masturbate. I still watch porn. But I don't have the same level of attraction, right? So I love making love to my partner to establish my biological imperative and to connect with them all the way. And then I can release myself of that, and I can let their body be their body and let my body be my body. And it was one of the most interesting and empowering moments because I've spent my whole life identifying as a gay man who insisted that my sexuality was a non-issue. And I wound up a non-sexuality man who wanted my experience to be as authentic as the experience I was asking about from anybody else. Because if knowing is half of understanding, the other half is experience. So we motivate others through the voice of experience. We talk about ish that works for and with us, that you think might work for and with others. And psychology, it's vital. Because it teaches us that we have a set list of words that work all the time. If you choose this sentence, you will not restrict your speech. You will, however, create an environment in which somebody else is able to express themselves without any filter and no negative impact on their person. And I'd like to see a whole lot more of that. I'm a big fan. So we point ourselves towards things that are going to work, right? I have all these positive, incredible role models. Like my mother has literally set a bra on fire on a march. You know, it's like that kind of bra burning. And I was like, yes, yes, like give me your power. Thank you. And then 10 years later, you know, I go to another protest and people teach me the importance of wearing wetted rags over your face in case they disseminate tear gas. Because we have to keep using our voices. And if you're very black or if you're very brown or if you're a man, woman, or a person, and if you ever feel marginalized, the only reason you feel like that is because somebody has committed a crime around you. And that's it. And I am not interested in perpetuating crimes. I believe in empowering and embettering people. And I keep coming out, and I don't know if I'm gay or if I'm bi or if I don't want to fuck anybody or if I want to fuck everybody, but I don't want to love you or if I want to only love you, but love you very well. I just want to practice my human experience because everything that I have dealt with is not unique. And what you're dealing with is not unique, and it is unique to you. And the 7 feet of water or the 20 feet of water that you're drowning in, that trauma, it's not comparable. Trauma is subjective. And the point is you're drowning. And all I'm interested in is talking to you about what fresh air feels like. And I've got some, you know, I'll breathe a little bit into you. But what I'd really like to do is see you do that for yourself and your neighbors. And we create a dynamic influence. So from the moment I was born till the moment that I die, if I have influenced two people to such an extent that they have dedicated their whole lives to improving the environment around them, I have created an exponential impact. And I have left a legacy that will never be documented nor recorded. And you have too, if you've done this, because I bet a lot of you have. I know a lot of you personally. I really like you guys. Some of you are very good friends of mine. And I know for a fact that the world is waiting for the seeds that you've sown. So thank you, everybody, for letting me talk about my queerness and my empowerment and my awesomeness, because there's a lot of it. But also for celebrating the fact that it's 2019 now. We talk about our feelings. We express empathy. And by being present tonight at a sold-out show where people are sharing their experience, you are understanding something on a more deep and dynamic level than many people will ever take the effort to do. And I am so very grateful for your presence. Thank you for listening to me and to my fellows and for being a part of what Trapdoor is and sharing stories. I appreciate you. I love you.